Hello and welcome to the programme. Well, as you join me, I'm in my back garden. It's just after 8:30 p.m. And in his back garden in County Wicklow, I'm in South County Dublin, is Niall Hatch of Birdwatch Ireland. Good evening, Niall.
Evening, Derek. How are you?
So what's the weather like there?
It's a lovely evening, I have to say. It's very calm, very quiet. On the crisp side, it's not terribly warm. It was a nice sunny day, but the sun has gone in now, so it's getting darker and it's getting cooler. But there's lots of bird song. I'm hearing lots of birds around the place, which is really nice.
And I've got a good bit of bird song here too, because my house actually backs onto the Airfield Trust. It's a private farm that was left in trust to the state by two sisters, the Overends. It's a beautiful place to visit. But at any rate, Niall, good to be talking to you this evening. Now, anybody who's been listening to Radio 1 over the last week will know that we have a special programme this evening about the Easter Bunny, given the time of year it is. We'll come to that shortly. But a lot of people talking about the fact that we had to cancel the Dawn Chorus this year. I was very upset, and our listeners are very upset, and you are very upset, Niall.
I absolutely was. It's one of the highlights of my year. I really love the Dawn Chorus programme. It's just, it's so much fun to be a part of. But also, we get so much wonderful feedback about it. It really speaks to people, and I think that there's something about birdsong that helps people really connect to nature. So, really disappointed that it can't go ahead this year, but obviously understandably so. These are difficult times in which we're living, and it's one of those necessary things that has to happen, unfortunately. I'm sure we'll be back bigger and better than ever than next year. I'm looking forward to that very much, but for this year we'll just have to enjoy the song mainly in our own gardens, I think.
Well, I hope so, because this was the fifth international Dawn Chorus, and we had more countries than ever participating this year. And it's also 25 years in May of Mooney Goes Wild. Can you believe we've been on the air for 25 years?
That's extremely impressive, all right. To have a programme dedicated to wildlife that's been going that long is something really that RT should be proud of. I think it's fantastic.
Well, I'm certainly very proud of it, very proud of Aina and Richard. You'll hear them in the programme we're broadcasting very shortly. So I want to take my hat off to Richard and Aina and Terry and Jim Wilson, everybody else who's contributed to the programme over the years. We'll talk about that in May. But I want to talk to you a little bit about birdsong right now, at this time of the evening, which is why we're pre-recording this programme. We're not meeting with each other. We're keeping a very social distance from each other. You're in your garden, as I said, and I'm in my garden. And we're some, 20 kilometres from each other.
That's right. So at this time of day, of course, it's the dusk chorus we're talking about, and as I'm speaking to you now, the light is just starting to drop and the birds are starting to gear up for that song. It's already pretty good at this stage in early April, but as April progresses, the songs will get louder and stronger, more birds will join in, and then usually by early May, the dawn chorus and the dusk chorus really peak. That's when it's really at its best. And then after that, it kind of peters off through the month of May as the birds become more preoccupied with the business of nesting, looking after their eggs and their chicks, finding food. There's less time around for the males, particularly, to be able to sing. And of course, at that stage, they've already attracted a mate. They've done a lot of their territorial defence work, so they don't really need to. Right now, in April, they're establishing those territories. So singing is a very serious business for them. And a lot of them are just sort of practicing, trying it out now. Obviously, we're going to have quite a few migrants arriving in the coming weeks, too, that are going to add to that chorus. So mainly it's just the resident birds that are singing away loudly. As I'm talking to you, there's a lovely starling on the roof of the building beside me, and it's just calling away. I don't often get to hear them here, so that's really nice. That's what it's doing. It's trying to attract a mate. It's trying to declare its patch and trying to show off how fit and strong it is, which is what birdsong is all about.
Well, in my garden at the back, I have got a blackbird, I've got some wood pigeons singing, I've got a robin off to my left, and they're all doing exactly what you were talking about. And where I'm standing right now is right beside my nest box. And if you're watching the Today Show with Maura and Dahi last Monday, you would have seen me live from the garden, and I was explaining the nest box. It's designed like a three-pointer sign that you'd see in an old country road. And one pointer is saying Mooney Goes Wild, the other says RT Radio 1, and the other one says Nest Watch 2016, because that's when we had this box erected. I had an old box, as you will remember, for about 14 years, but it was rotten, in an awful state. I had to get rid of it. And inside this box, it's designed, and I'll put a little video on the website, rte.ie/Mooney, so you can see the activity from last year. It's designed just like a thatched cottage. Got a little fireplace. It's got a picture of John Kennedy, President Kennedy, over the fireplace. It's got an old TV with the rabbit's ears, you know, the old rabbit's ears. And it's even got a door and a window. And over the door is a St. Bridget's cross to keep away the evil spirits. But the whole purpose of it was to introduce people not just to the birds, but a little bit of our own culture and looking at how people would have lived in parts of Ireland. And this is something we're hoping to take forward next year when everything is settled down, please God it will, with our partners in Europe, for each country to actually create their own nest box that resembles a traditional home in that country and have one platform where all of these webcams can be streamed from and you can have a look at them. Now, right now, my blue tits have not come back yet, Niall. I did see them prospecting in early February. I saw them going into the box and coming out, but they haven't started to nest yet. Why?
Well, they can be very fickle little creatures. And as you said, in February, that's when they often go and decide where they want to nest. They go around testing different sites. And although it'll be a few weeks or even months before they actually get down to the business of building the nest and laying the eggs, they've already fixed in their mind what the best likely locations are. So it could be, unfortunately, they found somewhere they like better. There's no accounting for taste.
No.
Yeah, there's no accounting for taste. But having said that, it's not too late. There's still lots of blue tits haven't started nesting yet. So there's every chance they still could. And when they start, it's usually quite quick. They can build those nests very rapidly, and then the eggs are laid before you know it, and then they're being incubated, then you have little chicks very quickly. So once they start, they really do it very rapidly. So I'll keep my fingers crossed for you.
Oh, I'm keeping my fingers and my toes crossed. It's only the female that builds the nest, though, in the blue tit family.
That's right, yes. So with different species behave in different ways. So with some birds, like the robin, for example, both sexes play a part in doing that. But with the blue tit, like with many other birds, the female builds the nest there. The male is still a good parent. He does some of the incubation work, of course, and he brings lots of food to his mate and to the chicks. So that happens there. Contrast that to birds like most duck species, for example, like the mallards or the tufted ducks that might be in your local park. In those species, what happens is the female does 100% of the work and the male does absolutely nothing whatsoever. His sole job is
something.
Just to, well, one thing, it's very, very, very quick and soon forgotten about. It's his job to mate with the female, and that is his entire contribution to the whole process. She lays the eggs by herself, builds the nest herself, of course, then looks after the chicks once they hatch out all by herself, and the male does absolutely nothing further.
Is there any situation in nature where the male takes over the incubation completely?
There are a few cases, yes. There are a few exceptions that prove the rule. In Ireland, we have one example particularly. It's a very rare bird called the red-necked phalarope. It's a member of the wader family, but it's one of the most colourful waders in the world. They're absolutely tiny, but they're a lovely red patch on the neck, a big long pointed beak, and they're really small, barely bigger than a sparrow, but with big long legs and beak. And in that species, what happens is that it's the female who's the really colourful one. She does the singing, she does the territorial displays and threatens the other females. She attracts in a male. The male then mates with her and she lays the eggs. And as soon as she's laid the eggs, she then scarpers and leaves him to do all the incubation and all the rearing of the chicks. She never sees her own chicks. In fact, what research has shown is that the ones that breed in Ireland, which now only breed in quite remote parts of the Mullet Peninsula in Mayo, and that kind of area, some of it on Bird Watch Ireland Reserve, actually. What happens then is the female does that, lays the eggs, and then she actually leaves and goes further north, perhaps to somewhere like Iceland or Scotland, and entices another male and sort of talks him into looking after the eggs. So she just leaves Ireland entirely and has these little families all over the place. So it's a very interesting strategy. There's another bird called the dotterel, which does the same thing. It doesn't breed here in Ireland, although we occasionally get them on migration, and there is a small population breeding in Scotland. And they have this role reversal as well, where the female is the colourful one, she's the dominant one, she displays and sings and marks the territory, and the male does all the child rearing and incubating. But in the natural world, it's very rare. It's usually either just the female alone or a 50-50 split between the parents.
Actually, I want to go back to my blue tits. I don't want to be too unkind to the male, because I know the female, when she lays the eggs, and she lays one each day until the full clutch is laid, and that can be anything up to 16 eggs, depending on how productive she is in that year and how much food she gets. But she then starts incubating when the last egg is laid. But he does feed her during that period, doesn't he?
He does. He's very attentive. And it's lovely when you especially see it on a nest camera, because there's a hidden world to these birds' lives that we're only able to see in the last few years. You'll see the female particularly turning over the eggs, making sure that they all get evenly incubated. And all the time the male is coming and giving her food. And he's also keeping watch for danger. So sometimes you can hear him somewhere else in the garden keeping a watch out for maybe a cat or a squirrel or something like that that might pose a threat. And he's giving these little cheeps, these little high-pitched calls that you barely notice, but they're signals to the female to keep a low profile, keep the head down. Don't make any noise at the moment. And when the chicks hatch out too, sometimes they'll respond to that as well. They'll be told basically by their parents to shut up, and they will. So it's quite interesting to see that, because obviously chicks in the nest, they're competing with each other for food. There's all this cheeping and hollering, wanting the parents to feed them, which can be dangerous. So some species, the birds have learned to be quiet when their parents tell them to. So I'm sure there's a few parents at home at the moment who wish they had similar skills. It's interesting with blue tits as well, because although to our eyes the male and the female look exactly the same pretty much, to each other they look very different. Male blue tits have a big patch of ultraviolet coloration on the backs of their heads, which the females lack. Now, we humans, our eyes are not capable of seeing ultraviolet. It's a completely invisible part of the spectrum to us. But to birds, it's a colour just like any other, just like red, green or blue. We just can't even conceive of what it must look like. So it's a mystery colour. And in the same way that, let's say, blue and yellow would mix together to make green, so blue and ultraviolet must mix together to make yet another colour that we can't even imagine. So blue tits probably look quite different to the way we actually expect if you look at them through another blue tit's eyes.
That's how predators find their prey on the ground, because they trace the urine. They can see the ultraviolet urine trace, can't they? Isn't that true?
That's right. That's what kestrels do, particularly. Birds of prey, like many other birds, can see ultraviolet, but no mammal can see that at all. So the thing is that mouse and vole urine, it actually does, yes, reflect ultraviolet light. One of the unpleasant things about mice, especially if you happen to have them in your house, is that mice have no control over their sphincter muscles. So they just leak a little trail of urine everywhere they go. And they're not aware that this is actually reflecting ultraviolet light that they can't see, that we humans mm-hmm. can't see, but a bird like a kestrel can see like a beacon. So they're able to follow these trails through the vegetation to the undergrowth and see exactly where the trail stops, there must be a mouse. And that's how they find them.
And then back to the blue tits, something similar but different. The blue tits, you will see, they will actually take away the fecal sacs from the young in the nest. Yes. When they feed them, when they come in to feed the nestlings, you'll see a nestling just turn upside down and this little white sac come out of its bottom. And then one of the adults will take it away and fly as far away from the nest as it possibly can, sometimes dropping it in a river so it flows downstream. So there's no evidence of there being any bird around, no waste at all for any predator to pick up on.
That's absolutely right. And it's amazing, these little packets, these fecal sac, they're contained in a little membrane, so that it's not even a messy experience. The parent bird just takes this little sac, it doesn't break, and they take it and then, as you said, they drop it away from the nest. And the idea for that, behind that, is first of all, they don't want to foul the nest, because obviously having droppings in the nest could lead to bacteria and flies and all sorts of other unpleasant things that they don't want. But more importantly, if there were droppings around the nest, it would be a sure sign to an observant predator that there were young chicks in that nest, and it would be very dangerous for them. So that's the strategy that the blue tits, like many other Irish birds have, is to make sure the nest is kept as clean as possible. Now, there are some birds that take completely the opposite strategy, and a good example of that is a bird called the hoopoe, which doesn't breed in Ireland, although most years we get a few of them, particularly on the south coast, when they overshoot France on migration. It's a very colourful bird. It looks like half bird, half butterfly. It's got these big black and white zebra patterned wings, sort of pink body with a big flamboyant pink crest on its head. It's a remarkable looking bird. And so they look very beautiful to us, but they're actually one of the stinkiest birds around. They smell terrible. And their strategy at the nest is to make the nest smell so bad that no predator wants to go anywhere near it. So imagine how bad something would have to be that something like a fox wouldn't want to eat there. That's how bad they are. So there's two different strategies there. Keep it really clean or keep it really dirty.
Thank you very much indeed. And I just want to remind people, we were talking at the beginning of this programme about the Dawn Chorus and the Dusk Chorus and the International Dawn Chorus being cancelled in May. But we have made available to you on our website, rte.ie/Mooney, 1 hour uninterrupted birdsong, which I recorded last May, on the 3rd of May, at Kuskany Marsh Nature Reserve. Usually before the Dawn Course, which was on the 4th of May last year, I'll go into the site where we're broadcasting from the main outside broadcast site, and I'll have a listen to where the birds are, and when the OB guys come down, I'll say, there's a bird over there, a bird over there, a bird over there. There's a robin, there's a blackbird, you've got a sedge warbler over there, and you've got some mallard on the lake over there. So that is now available, never been broadcast before. Go to rte.ie/Mooney. A simple stereo recording, so if you were standing where I had placed the two microphones, Chris, crossed, you would be hearing what they're hearing. So it's a very real feeling. It's not like we normally give you with the 24 or 34 microphones and then 34 locations around the world, but it'll give you a good idea of what a dawn chorus is like if you were standing in the middle of the woodland. You've heard it, Niall, haven't you?
Yeah, it's really lovely, and as you said, it really is like being there, because as you said, on the Dawn Chorus programme, it's a blending of many microphones from many different sites, but this is a pure recording in a way. It shows you exactly what it's like to be right where the birds are and to hear it through their ears, because birds hear it in very much the same frequency range that we do. Mammals like cats and dogs, they hear at a higher pitch than we do, but birds is more or less the same, which is why birdsong sounds so good to us and why it's so easily picked up by microphones that are designed for human voices as well. And it's a really lovely recording. It really, really evocative, really puts us in the mood. I'll certainly be listening to it, maybe with a bit of a tear in my eye that we're not doing it for real this year, but I'm looking forward to next year already.
Well, listen, we'll talk again next week, because I want to talk to you about the energy birds require to actually sing at dusk and at dawn, and we welcome welcome your emails, mooney@rte.ie. But please do, don't miss out on nature. As I was saying to Maura and Dahi during the week, if you want to enjoy the dawn chorus or birdsong or nature, pull up a chair in your favourite room and open the window first thing in the morning and at dusk around this time, and you'll get that full spectrum of nature which is out there. Or just visit the website rte.ie/mooney and download the Dawn Chorus broadcast. It's very easy to find. You'll find it on our homepage, and you can listen to that wherever you want, anytime, anywhere, at your leisure.